some of you may have some doubts whether Mr. William F. Buckley Jr. actually exists. He moves so fast from place to place that he's hardly ever really seen. So any of you who have not seen him in the flesh may have an opportunity, if you look back and if Mr. Buckley will get up for a moment, he does exist, for better or for worse. It's my pleasure now to introduce Mr. Peter Steele, consultant on economic and corporate affairs, formerly Vichy Association of Missouri Industry, and formerly also with General Electric in charge of corporate support. Mr. Steele.
I'm a little embarrassed here. As an outsider to the academic area, and also to be sandwiched in this time, I expected to be the last speaker, which would give me a great advantage. But since I am in a sandwich, let's get on with it. I'm not going to speak on the matter of dealing with present realities, although, of course, that is of the utmost importance. My business for quite a number of years has been the following of those mechanisms which tend to affect the long-term development of public affairs. In short, public affairs research, but of a long-term nature, with an emphasis on communication. So when I got this invitation, which may have been a compliment, or maybe one that couldn't get anybody the last moment, I was interested in the title. The title is, if I recall correctly, The Road Back, or Paths to Freedom in America. In my business, at this stage of the game, that title encompasses just about the whole lot. There isn't any road back to freedom in America, and there certainly isn't any road back. There are only, as the second part of the title says, paths ahead. All of them uphill, at this stage in the game, all of them relatively lonely, brambled, some of them leading to dead ends, but all of them absolutely necessary in the long run, through primarily the academy, through the religious community and so forth, if there ever is to be a road to freedom under present circumstances. So what I had intended to say today, and will say now briefly, is the application of what we at GE used to call POIM, P-O-I-M, Planning, Organizing, Integrating, Measurement. It's a good corporate kind of thing we used to worship in front of. Or the application of exactly the same kind of planning sequence to the world which you and I are to varying degrees discontented with at the present moment, to make it more to our liking. The sequence consists of five steps. One is to define the kind of world you wish to live in. Second, to establish the values and institutions essential to undergirding such a world. Third, to bring into sharp focus the long-term goals, ideological, social, political, economic, etc., which must be achieved if these institutional and value requirements are to be met. Four, putting your finger on the short-term objectives which must be secured if these long-term goals are to be achieved. And five, and this is where my area comes in, right at the tag end where the tail very seldom wags the dog. Research to accurately and realistically identify those short-term objectives you are capable of achieving with the resources you command under the concrete circumstances you face. Not what you like to be, but what is. This is what Professor Schmidt was talking about just a moment ago. The trouble usually is with a thing of this nature, when you put it down, is that you get in an awful hurry. And you have a great tendency to hurry through to that step five where you're dealing with the nitty-gritty realities before you adequately and sequentially take care of the other four. The first one is deceptively easy. To find the kind of world you want to live in. And it's the hardest step of the whole lot. It means sitting down and divorcing yourself from reality, looking inward at the values which have meaning to you, and taking the time, which not a single one of us has, individually, to set down in some form which can be discussed so that some form of consensus can be reached. If any movement of a long-term nature is to be developed, rather than on an ad hoc basis, if this kind of a world is going to exist, virtually any problem can be defined can be solved. The same is true here. The reason we've been failing to date, in my opinion, is that we haven't followed this kind or haven't had the time in defeat to follow this kind of a pattern or to set up the mechanisms even for this kind of pattern. I had intended to ask, where is our Center for the Study of Democratic Institutions? Then I learned that there may be the beginnings of one of these over in New Jersey, and I'm very happy to hear that. The first step is closely related to the second. And here again, the academy is of utmost importance. Here is where the lopsided balance between the so-called left and the so-called right begins to show up. There are scads of meetings, discussions, and seminars which are always going on in intellectual quarters such as these. But to what do they concern themselves with? By and large, and I use the terms very generally, the right up to this point,
pardon me,
has been concerned more with how to circumnavigate the ADA and elect people to office. While the left, again generally, has been far more conscious and containing far more frequent meetings on theory. You cannot develop any sort of a permanent constructive movement without hope and without paying sufficient attention to theory so that the results of this can be transmitted by communicators to activists in terms which at the same time carry long hope. Example right here, just came in the mail the other day. Here's a meeting going on this 13th and 14th. Bill, you ought to have somebody over there. It'll be a very interesting meeting. It's the Debs Day luncheon of the Socialist Party USA. The goal, as they say out of the Socialist Platform 1968, is to seek a mass movement and a majority of the Democratic left. Very practical goal. Their definition, though, of the circumstances under which they must operate in order to achieve this shows that they are very much interested in this usually thought of impractical matter of theory. They say, simply put, the question which faces all advocates of social change is this: how can we rally a democratic majority on behalf of the measures which America and the world so desperately need? The answer requires new thinking, for it involves rejecting elements of both the traditional socialist and liberal analysis, as well as some assumptions which are widespread in the third radical revival. Here is a volume that I get frequently from the State Department. It lists the external, the research going on in the international area of our various college campuses. And if you look at this, as I do sometimes, I wish I could look at it more often, you see this distinct imbalance between those who generally reflect the point of view generally reflected here, and those who generally reflect the point of view of those who don't wish to have your ideas prevail. The third step is to bring into sharp focus the values, the long-term goals, ideological, social, political, economic, etc., which must be achieved if these institutional value requirements must be met. And here we begin to get out of the academic area once your job has been done, and get down to the more political, more controversial, more activist area in public affairs. Where is, for example, out of the academy, the pro-capitalist counterpart of the year 2000, or a generally libertarian counterpart of Davis, in which those ideas first appear? Just as one example. I'm not saying that you have to go back to the Garden of Eden, but I am saying if these paths are ever to be coordinated to such a point, and I hate that word, I use in the mechanical sense, to such a point that you begin to get a rope rather than this compartmentalized approach, these deserve your consideration, these kinds of thoughts. And finally, in the next to the last step, to put your finger on the short-term objectives which must be secured to achieve these long-term goals. Again, I mentioned research. To identify clearly and accurately the concrete public affairs circumstances with which you must contend today. Is there anyone in this room that has the idea, and I'm sure there isn't, that the mainstream values of the 20s and 30s are anything more today in terms of real power relationships than a splinter to the right? Because if you do think that, then I suggest that you ought to look a little further. And I think that this thing that you mentioned about these last week's events is a wonderful lesson in true power relationships. Once those circumstances have been identified, to clarify the most effective public affairs strategies and tactics to deal with these concrete circumstances, and there you can play a part. And finally, in the area in which I'm particularly interested, to identify what your competition has been doing, is doing, is capable of doing, to further advance his point of view at your expense. I have here an example which I won't give you, unless somebody is interested in asking for, of one such program which has now been worked on for 6 years and is gradually coming out, which has scarcely been noticed yet, but which I feel will be a real issue in 5 to 6 or 7 years. Finally, to accurately and realistically identify those short-term objectives you are capable of achieving with the resources you command under the concrete circumstances which you face. And here I maintain we have a great deal of work to be done. And in that, a large part of it is research, and another large part is communications. We have Vic Milioni here of the Institute for Collegiate Studies, Intercollegiate Studies. There are men who combine both a point of view with extraordinary personal capabilities, those two characters, who pass through the influence of that particular group on college campuses. Is there any place where somebody who's interested in communication can keep track of these people and can see that their extraordinary capabilities, coupled with a point of view, are put to work and are raised in the public consciousness? I don't think there is, at least I don't know. Well, I got a lot of other notes here. I won't save that for questions and answers if you're interested. The gist of what I've said here is A, that you can have no true movement unless you can offer hope, that no true movement can exist and go forward without a literature, without communications, that except for, say, an Alan Drury, which is a long way away from the usual academic idea, we have what novelists? Except for Bill Buckley, and I put this down before I knew you were going to be here, whom do we have who can at least make the liberal community listen to what he says, even if they don't agree? Except for C.S. Lewis, who is there in that area? Except for Don Lipset, where is our satirist? You're wasting a lot of talent right there. Except for Andrew Wyeth, where is our painter or sculptor? And where is our cartoonist to come within spitting distance of David Levine of the New York Review of Books? Where are these people? This identification of resources and then their application. These are the kinds of signposts I say that we should look for any sort of a road forward to freedom. And I maintain they have to be painted.
Thank you.